Coming up, we're recapping the first round of the 2026 NBA Draft. Got myself, King McClure, Tom Havenstra talking about everything that we saw. Winners, losers, biggest steals, biggest losers. So much to get into. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We are here with King McClure and Tom Havershaw to recap the first round of the 2026 NBA Draft. How you doing, guys?
Dude, I'm great. I mean, the NBA Draft is done. We got the Giannis trade, and I feel like it was a bit chalky this draft tonight, but I will say I feel like we hit on a lot of picks. All the expectations going into the night, I feel like a lot of things that we thought were going to happen actually made us look smart by calling it, you know?
You know, we actually, like the first 15 picks, I want to say we're like 15 for 15.
Yeah.
Like we did not miss collectively. So we shot a good percentage.
But ultimately, I'll say not to like, I mean, take away credit from us. A lot of it was predictable, including the top four. It went chalk. As expected, AJD Bonson, number one pick to the Washington Wizards. Darren Peterson, number two to the Utah Jazz. Cam Boozer, number three to the Memphis Grizzlies. And then Caleb Wilson, number four to the Chicago Bulls. Starting with the Wizards, Tom. AJD Bonson, one day after Trae Young gets re-signed to a four-year, $200-plus million contract. AJ going there. I think this is, like, in my opinion, even though Boozer, you and I both had him number one on our boards, I think for Washington, DiBonsa just a perfect fit for this team while also offering the upside to be the best player in the draft class, because you got Trae Young, you got Trey Johnson, you got Keyshawn George, you got Will Riley, a bunch of ball handlers, Bub Carrington, AD, Alex Saar in the front court. What's this team missing? A 6'9" go-to scorer in AJ DiBonsa. So I love the pick for Washington. I think they made the right choice.
Yeah, I totally see that. For me, it's Cam Boozer. I think he's the right choice at number one. You don't have to deal with any sort of fit issues. If you have a guy like Cam Boozer who's got the talent, he's younger than AJ DiBonsa and Darren Peterson, and also just processes the game at an elite level. I think this is, for me, I think we might look back in a few years' time and wonder how Cam Boozer went to three at Memphis. DiBonsa, for sure, has high upside. But if I'm an NBA team and I see what Cameron Boozer did at Duke this year, a winning player, won at every level, the assist rate, the three-point shooting, the ability to dribble at that position and that size, I feel like he still has a lot to go in his game. And just because we have this Carlos Boozer image in our head of what he was, I feel like that's limited people's image of what his upside is. And DiBonsa is not a bad player. I just think Cam Boozer was the right pick.
I think he's the safe pick. That's what you said earlier in the draft show, KOC, was that Cam Boozer is the safe pick. So when you look at upside, I mean, I think that AJ does have a higher upside than Cam Boozer, just from like a superstar potential. Doesn't mean that Cam Boozer can't be an all-star, which I think he will be an all-star for years to come. But we talk about superstar, like, you take my franchise, we build everything around you, you lead us to the promised land, you end up being a top 10 player in the NBA. I mean, I think AJ definitely has that potential. I think Cam Boozer, though, is just a safe pick. Like, from day one, he has a chance to be an all-star. Like, from day one, just because he's totally that level of good.
He definitely has a chance to be an all-star from day one. Cam Boozer does. Mm-hmm. Also, that's a chance to be the rookie of the year.
I think
AJ DiBonsa, I mean, he's going to be sharing the rock with Trae Young, and AD is going to get touches, and Trey Johnson should have a big second year there. And Darren Peterson going to the Utah Jazz with the number two pick. You got Lauri Markkanen in there, and Jaren Jackson Jr., Keontae George, who put up all-star numbers in the second half last year, could take a big leap. So Peterson could be in an off-ball role somewhat similar to what we saw at Kansas, but I think for the Utah Jazz, there's so much talk for multiple mock drafts in a row. I had Cam Boozer number two to the Utah Jazz. And in the recent days, I do think Utah did turn over every stone. In the conversations I have, I do believe that they did strongly consider Cam Boozer and Caleb Wilson. Don't forget Caleb Wilson in that conversation. But ultimately, choosing Darren Peterson, to me, is a signal that the Angels, a team, they in the past in Boston took such major risks trading down number one to number three in the Fultz-Tatum year, taking Jaylen Brown in a year where everybody in Boston booed the pick, where they were saying they should take Chris Dunn out of Providence. They should have traded it for Jimmy Butler. They took Brown. They've never had fear. And so with Peterson, after this weird past year with the cramping, missing 11 out of 35 games, didn't look like he had the same burst as he did in high school. Everything I've heard, the people I've talked to, is that Peterson is somebody that has proven that he's got the burst back and workouts. And we'll see it. You know, if you want to see it to believe it, sure. We'll find out next month in Summer League in July in Las Vegas, but or in the Utah Summer League as well. Utah hosts their own. But I think for Peterson at number two, I think Boozer would have been a fine choice here. I had him here. I talked myself into it. But in the last 24 hours, Tom, I got to say, I've been persuaded to think that Peterson was, for them, the high upside choice here. And so I get it. I just think this is really a testament to, as much as you and I love Boozer, a testament to this draft class. There were three guys that could be the best player in this draft class that would be the number one pick in any ordinary year. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the main takeaway is here, where there was no losing. There will be a best player. But all three of these guys, I think, make sense for all three teams. They landed AJ with Washington, Peterson with Utah, and then Boozer with Memphis. I think it's three perfect fits.
Well, I think from a fit standpoint, there's no argument that Utah getting Darren Peterson makes more sense than Cam Boozer. When you're talking about a team that already has Larry Markkanen, Jaren Jackson Jr., and potentially Walker Kessler coming back as a restricted free agent this summer, to me, it feels like Darren Peterson must have been otherworldly in high school for what happened at Kansas to not affect his draft stock.
Yeah.
Because think about it. When you talk about a guy who averaged 2 assists every 40 minutes at Kansas, which is one of the lowest rates for any guard in this class, and you're talking at number two, you're taking him over Cam Boozer, who had over 4 assists per 40 minutes and was the engine of that Duke offense. And Darren Peterson, as good of a score is, if you're getting him at number two, you got to be damn sure that him at high school, you're going to get that player again, because at Kansas, he was not the engine of that offense.
You know, what's interesting is I think that out of the top three picks, I think that Cam Boozer landed in a spot that's going to allow him to reach his full potential quicker. Because when I look at the Wizards, I kind of asked this question on the show, but is AJ's potential going to be limited early on because he has to share the rock with a Trae Young or share touches with an AD? And then you look at Darren Peterson, well you're sharing a rock with Keontae George.
I flip that to you, King? What if it actually raises the ceiling for DiBonsa in particular, because he's going to be in a situation where to impact winning, you can't just score. If you're sharing the ball with Trae Young, to
that's fair.
You got to defend.
Yeah.
You got to rebound. You got to do the dirty work. You got to do the other things. You got to play off ball.
Is he willing to do that?
I think he is.
Yeah, I think that becomes a question. But when you talk about Cam Boozer, it's like, in order for you to win, you have to do it all. We are actually going to build everything around you, especially if they get off jaw. Like, it's Cam Boozer's team from day one. It's not AJ's team. It's not Darren's team. This is Boozer's one of the few guys in the top 10. Like, I would say Boozer, and I'll probably say Acuff, right? Where it's you guys' team, and you take the keys, and now we're building everything we do around you.
I think these GMs and these front offices with the first and second pick, Washington and Utah, they might have doubled down on those acquisitions at the deadline last year. You trade for Anthony Davis, and you trade for Jaren Jackson Jr., and then Cam Boozer comes into the draft, the winningest guy in this class.
Yeah.
The best player of the year, the youngest of those three, and has, you know, the lineage of a legacy guy in Carlos Boozer as his father. And as I wrote for Yahoo this week, legacy guys, Jalen Brunson, Devin Booker, Kobe Bryant, Stephen Curry. You go on down the line. If you're the son of an NBA player like Cam Boozer is, your ceiling is a lot higher than a lot of draft day expectations. And so for me, I wonder, Kev, do you think if Jaren Jackson Jr. was not a Utah Jazz, and if Anthony Davis was not a Washington Wizard, is this a different draft?
It very well might be. I think it's a really good question. It very well might be. Because here's the thing, Tom. people often talk about just take best player available, whatever that means. But best player available is in part dictated by your philosophy, by your roster, by building a whole roster. It's a team you're building. I know basketball very much can be dictated by individual players, but when there's three guys who are number one pick quality players and there's really no losing, I think for Memphis at number three, it's like, great, we'll just lean back and take the guy who's available right there. I think you do factor in roster and situation. I do think that's a factor for sure. And I think ultimately for these teams, that's why things worked out, why it feels like the puzzle pieces fit. AJ to Washington needing a forward. Darren Peterson to Utah needing more of a two, another guard in the backcourt. Cam Boozer going number three to Memphis next to Zach Edey, next to Cedric Coward. That team is big and long and versatile. They get Kareem Lopez. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But Kareem Lopez with the 21st pick after trading down twice. Very interesting choice there. But then Caleb Wilson, number four to the Chicago Bulls. They also get Dalen Swain at number 15. Yeah. I think the Bulls potentially come away big winners here. I'm very intrigued by the way the Bulls are building out their roster, Tom, because I think you already get Josh Giddey. You got Manus Muzelis. Those are your two clear-cut keepers. Mm-hmm. And then you have Noah Senge, who you hope turns into something, last year's lottery pick. And then now you get Caleb Wilson. You get a big. And you draft Dalen Swain, who needs to fix his jumper. At number 15, but a great defensive player, adds size. As you talked about earlier, King, during our live show, played a little point at certain points in his career too, especially in the tournament run for Texas. I think Chicago is a very intriguing team from a roster building standpoint for their new GM, Bryson Graham, from like the amount of size they have.
I look at this guy, Dalen Swain, and say, watch as much Jimmy Butler tape as you can. Because the downhill, getting to the free throw line, has a flat line drive shot. And there was a guy at the end of the first round that the Chicago Bulls once drafted in Jimmy Butler, who did a lot of the same things as Swain. And I do think that the athlete and the ability to get to the free throw, and you can't coach that. And a lot of the things that you see in him, I think it's a great draft for the Chicago Bulls. And Bryson Graham getting the job and then hiring Tiago Splitter, getting Caleb Wilson at four and Swain. This is, I think, a new dawn in Chicago, and it would be awesome for the NBA, King, for the Bulls to be back.
And, you know, what's interesting is when you look at the Trailblazers, you know, I play a lot of 2K. So when you look at the Trailblazers, I used to always love...
Painful experience playing 2K.
I used to always...
Those games have gone downhill, King,
I can't even lie, you're right. But I used to love playing with the Trailblazers like last year, because of all the size and the length on the defensive side, right? You didn't have much playmakers, but you had a bunch of length and versatility, and I could switch one through five and make your life really tough, right? And I look at this Bulls team, and I kind of see something similar, like in terms of length, in terms of size, in terms of a bunch of wings who can defend, like your Dalen Swains, your Caleb Wilsons. Now you got a length and size and Giddey. You got so many dudes who can do Buzelis. You got some dudes who can do so many things and can be very versatile on both sides of the basketball and just give you options, right? And I think that, I mean, the Tiago Splitter coming to Chicago could be a massive reason for that. But I really do like what Chicago is doing. I still think you need a point guard. I don't know if, what's my man's name from Minnesota?
Rob Dillingham.
I don't know if Rob Dillingham is necessarily the answer. So I still need to find a point guard to put it all together, because he's a good player, a good shot maker. But I don't know if he's can really make everybody else around him better.
I think Dillingham, give him a chance. That's what it seems like they're going to be doing. And maybe they take a guard in the second round. There's a lot of guards available, but I think they're going to probably just say, you know what, Dillingham, you're going to get an opportunity. You're going to extended run more than you ever did in Minnesota. That's what
he was so
like.
Good in the preseason for Minnesota last season. And then I was expecting bigger things from Dillingham, and then it all fell apart last year. Yep. And it seemed like the writing was on the wall.
Didn't he have the quote like, "I kind of forgot if I'm good at this"? Like he had.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, he did.
So Chicago's a really interesting team next year. I'm going to be dialing into what they're going to be looking like next year, especially with these two newcomers coming and playing under Tiago Splitter.
Yep. A lot of guards taken in the 5 to 10 range. To the Clippers at number 5, Keaton Wagler out of Illinois. Michael Brown to the Brooklyn Nets at number 6. Darius Acuff to the Kings at number 7. Kingston Flemings to the Atlanta Hawks at 8. We got a break from a guard at 9 with the Dallas Mavericks getting Maurice Johnson. But then Braden Burr to the Bucks at number 10. King, of these five guards taken in the 5 to 10 range, which guard team fit do you think is best?
I love Darius Acuff. And I love his fit for the Kings. I know, Tom, you wanted him to go to the Nets. But I really do think Darius Acuff at 7 to the Kings just makes sense. Because you literally give him the keys from day one, and he's running the show. The other one that I think is low-key kind of sneaky is Kingston Flemings. I actually really like that, especially with the athletes that they have on the wings, that you can run, you can play fast. They needed a point guard desperately because I don't think CJ McCollum was a PG. Well, he's not a PG. But I think the Kingston Flemings going to Atlanta is a sneaky one for me, that I really do think that he can be really good for you. He's a willing defender, and he can start your break. And, you know, when you got Jalen Johnson on a perimeter running the floor, and you can just throw things up to him and do whatever you want to do in the pick and roll or whatever, however you want to play. I mean, it gives you a bunch of versatility. So I do think that Atlanta got a really good one in Kingston Flemings.
Joshua Garcia in the live YouTube chat said, Darius is going to be great once the Kings trade him. I think it's obviously it is funny, but it's a pessimistic viewpoint of the Kings, and I root for Kings fans because they got a taste of what it's like to win, like the beam and all the fun they had. Yeah. And like that was a fun Kings team. They had Mike Brown there, and now he's a championship head coach. They got a taste of winning, and that's a great fan base. I just hope Darius Acuff and, you know, this Nick Clifford and Reno last year's second round pick, I hope it can lead to winning, Tom.
Three-level scorer Acuff. I mean, that's my pick for the best fit and the best point guard play of that group right there. And look, I think Acuff needs some elite defenders around him to kind of cover up some of the defensive deficiencies. But I think in today's NBA, I think you can do that. I don't think you're going to ask a lead guard what they're going to put on his shoulders offensively. Mm. We saw what happened to Jalen Brunson this year. I don't think a lot of people expected that Jalen Brunson could be as good as he was, but then they surrounded him with elite perimeter defenders and Karl-Anthony Towns. And I think Acuff, the prototype is there. And I think he is elite scorer at all three levels. When was the last time that the Sacramento Kings had an elite score at all three levels and a point guard who could play make for other people? Acuff is the guy. And if he isn't, you know, he might be on the smaller end, but I'm telling you, man, that guy can hoop.
Yeah.
I think those are good choices. Acuff, I mean, you mentioned Flemings as well to the Hawks. King, I really like Michael Brown. I had him as the top ranked guard of those guys. I had Brown, then Acuff personally. Mm. I just think Brown's defensive impact going to be a really interesting player for this kind of clean slate Brooklyn Nets team with his ability to play with and without the ball. I think with Yegor Dioman, those two together for the years to come could be a very interesting smaller guard pairing with a big guard and Dioman. And we'll be right back after this break. Was the one non-guard taken in that 5 to 10 range, and that was Maurice Johnson out of Michigan going to Dallas, now coached by Michigan Wolverines head coach Dusty May. King, there were three Wolverines on the board. Adai Mata, center from Michigan, Yaxel Lendenborg, forward out of Michigan, and Maurice Johnson, forward out of Michigan, the role player. How surprised were you, King, that Dallas ended up going with Merez of all those guys?
I was pretty surprised, but I think it just speaks so highly on Merez and what Dusty May thinks of him. Because I think that from just a standpoint of who do I think is the most talented, I mean, no doubt it's probably Mara, then it's the Yaxel, and then it's Merez. Now, Moraes in the long run could be arguably the better player. But as of right now, I don't think he was the most talented player out of the three. But I think that just because of the small things he can do, he can defend, he's tough, he's physical, he's switchable. Like I think those things contribute to winning, and Dusty May realized the impact that he had at Michigan with Moraes Johnson on the floor, which made him feel more comfortable taking him over the other two. So I think this speaks so highly of Moraes Johnson, how valuable he was to the Michigan team. Because to me, this tells me that Moraes Johnson was the most valuable piece on this Michigan team.
Whew. I mean, that's quite a statement. That's what the number nine pick says.
That's what it says, right? And I wouldn't have said that, but that's what this tells me, and that's why Dusty May went with this guy.
I wish I stuck with Moraes at nine in my mock. I mean, I don't care about getting every pick right or anything like that, but I had him in one of the additions and I switched him out. And, you know, I was thinking he might slide a little bit to like 12 or to OKC there. It ended up the other way around. Mara went 12 and Moraes Johnson went nine. But ultimately, like when I had Dusty May on my podcast back in middle of April, I think it was, and I asked him about Yaxel, I asked him about Adai, I asked him about Moraes. And like, I could just tell the way he talked about Moraes, there was just something that like he saw in him that was different than Adai and Yaxel. And like, he had this quote that he said to me that stuck in my mind, where he talked about, there's days, there's off days, like there is with any team, on the bus or either live in a game. And him and his staff had a saying they would say to each other. They'd say, well, we got Rez and they don't. And the point being that Moraes Johnson is just the type of guy who always sets the tone, who always shows up, who always makes winning plays. And I think Dallas Mavericks fans are quickly going to realize what that player is. Somebody who is 6'9" with a 7'5" wingspan, 251 pounds. Those guys don't grow on trees. Switches 1-5, can defend guards, can defend bigs. I think you can use him on Wemby. I think you can use him on perimeter guys. You can use him in literally any matchup. And then offensively, he was a total non-shooter at Illinois as a freshman king. And then it became a solid spot-up shooter at last year at Michigan. I think that's positive progress. He was a near 80% guy from the line. So I'm very optimistic about Dallas adding Moraes Johnson and then trading for Sergio De La Rea in the late first round.
I like that.
We saw him go number 25 to the Knicks.
Yeah.
And then, hey, the post-draft after the first round, Knicks traded De La Rea for the number 30 pick, Koa Pete, for Dallas, with two additional second-round draft picks. And then the Knicks traded Koa Pete to the Phoenix Suns for 3 second-round draft picks. But Dallas landing Sergio De La Rea, a guy I had top 20 on my board, on the cusp of winning the championship in the Spanish League for Valencia. He had 13 points in 17 minutes just yesterday, or maybe 2 days ago now, because now we're into Wednesday now. But like, he is competing for a championship, still playing this week in the middle of June. Now going to the Dallas Mavericks, I think with his shooting and versatility, a perfect fit, I think, next to Cooper Flagg and now Moraes Johnson, Tom.
Well, I think it speaks to Mike Schmitz, the new GM in Dallas, and Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball operations for Dallas, how much they believe in Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford at the center position, that they didn't go for Adai Mara. Now, that to me, that's where I would have gone. But I'm not the GM, and I'm not the president of basketball operations for the Dallas Mavericks, but it does pose the question, when you have PJ Washington and Najee Marshall on the team, what happens to them now that they have Cooper Flagg and Moraes? When you're talking about the fit on the team, does that make one of those two guys expendable that a team like the San Antonio Spurs, who are looking for a versatile four, can they go and get a more veteran guy like Najee Marshall or PJ Washington now that Moraes and Cooper Flagg are going to be taking up those backcourt or the forward slots there for the Dallas Mavericks? Interesting.
King, you're a Dallas guy. How are you feeling about this haul for them in the first round overall?
After the De La Rea trade, I feel a lot better. I didn't love Koa Pete, the pick, just because I feel like it was two players that are kind of similar. But after this De La Rea trade, I think it makes sense because you got Moraes Johnson. Then you add a guy who can play in the pick and roll of point guard, who can learn from Kyrie and De La Rea, but he's also a shooter that can play off ball. I mean, shot 47% in the last two seasons from behind the arc and can really let it fly.
Can I ask you a question about as a player?
Yeah.
would you in that locker room feel a certain way if you're seeing your head coach coming from Michigan and they draft Morez? Do you look at that a certain way, like preferential treatment, teacher's pet, any of that?
I feel like a lot of those guys don't really care. I think it just boils down to winning, right? Is he going to help us win or not? Now, I think it would matter if, you know, you drafted somebody like, say it was Coa Pete, right? Let's just throw out Coa Pete at number 9. Then it's like, okay, he only got to number 9 because of the connection there. But Merez Johnson, I feel like if it was Dusty May, I feel like if it was any other coach, like yeah. Merez Johnson would still be on that in that spot and would be the reasonable pick. So in my mind, I'm thinking if I'm a player, as long as he's going to help us win, which I think he can, like, that's all that matters. So regardless if y'all have a connection, just don't give him no special treatment or whatever, right? Because we still the vets and he's still a rook. But, like, as long as he can help us win and contribute to winning because of the mode that he plays with, I mean, he's one of those guys that instantly you have to give him respect because he plays so hard and he competes.
It's not every day you see that.
Yeah.
Coach getting hired and immediately taking his guy. And, you know, Schmitz and Ujiri are at the controls. This isn't Dusty May making this selection. But I could understand if a player felt a certain way about, hey, you just hired this guy and we're getting one of his players. If he makes a mistake out on the floor, is he going to pull him out of the game? Or is he going to say, hey, we got to keep my partnership together? So I just think it's very unique. We haven't seen this. College coaches who win a championship go to the next level right away and then take one of his guys since what? Like Patino with the Celtics. It's been a long time since we've seen a college coach drafting his guy in the same way.
It's going to be fascinating to see the way that plays out. I'm just very hyped about Dallas. I mean, what a turnaround. You got Nico Harrison trading Luka Doncic, and it's just a disaster, and the franchise is over, and Dirk is done with Dallas, and then, boom, they get the number one pick in Cooper Flagg, and Nico's fired, and AD's gone, and it's a clean slate team, and now they have Maurice Johnson, one of the best basketball coaches in the world, and Dusty May, and suddenly a guy in Cooper Flagg who's not just a number one pick, who's a very good player, he's a number one pick who can compete for future MVPs.
For sure.
And so for Dallas, it's gone from just an absolute horrible story to a potentially really beautiful one for those Mavericks fans who have stuck around. Number 11, the Golden State Warriors. I think the Warriors are the biggest loser of the first round, and it's not because of Jaxel Lehnenburg. It's because of what the ABC broadcast showed with Mike Dunleavy and Joe Lacob clearly in a disagreement, an argument during their pick at number 11, kind of bickering back and forth. Lacob threw his hands up, looked very frustrated. We don't know the exact details. I have not spoken to anybody about this quite yet, but something happened between Lacob and Dunleavy here with the selection at number 11, as you see those two just kind of going at it.
Throw his hands up in the air and then walk away from his GM. Who's on the phone? Now, Bob Myers has got to be watching that and saying like, okay. Yeah.
Not for a reason.
this is how many owners are going to be caught on camera doing what you see with Joe Lacob here? It's not every day that you see that. And Mike Dunleavy's working the phones, but there's clearly a disagreement here. And for me, you know, this is a big opportunity. I dare say a golden opportunity to go fortify the rotation around Stephen Curry, still playing at an all NBA level and averaging 27 points and leading the NBA in three-pointers once again for much of the season. Yeah. And Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler's out for next season or much of next season. This was a huge pick for the Golden State Warriors, and yet it seems like there's some disagreement here.
You know, I'm just curious on like just what it was. Like, did they want to trade the pick? Did they want to do something else with it?
We're entertaining trade offers. Like, during the draft.
I would say it has to be over the trade of the pick or not. Because I don't think that he would respond that way over choosing the wrong player. It's because I don't know what other player would fit in this specific slot that would make more sense to me. So I think it had to be over trading the pick to get something else that could help you win right now.
I agree. I think you're right, King. I think in all likelihood, it was probably some team trying to move up ahead of OKC to take a Dimata. He goes 12 to OKC. I bet it was somebody, I don't know who, trying to move up, and there was probably a disagreement over, can we get Yaxel at pick A, wherever it was, to trade down. But ultimately for Golden State, not a good look. I mean, Yaxel Lendenborg, we know he's a true to himself, a bit of a goofy goober. At his presser after the draft, he said, boy, things have come full circle. Back in 2016, I used to love Kyrie Irving and I hated Stephen Curry. It's like, dude,
that's his opening press conference. He signs. He's the greatest player in your franchise history. And you just say, I hated, hopefully past tense, hated that dude.
It was past tense. I hated.
Hated Steph Curry and loved Kyrie. That's not even full circle.
I know.
It is full circle.
That's not even full circle. What are we doing?
I thought full circle meant, hey, I worshipped Stephen Curry. I bought his shoes. I bought his jersey. I watched every Warriors game. This is full circle for me. But I think we need to... Is he really that much of a goofball that, like, this to me seems super bizarre on the first... Think about getting a new job and being like, this is the greatest moment of my career. My boss and my colleagues, I hated them. Hated them. So I guess I'm excited to be here. I mean, between the video with Joe Lacob and that... I don't know, man.
It's not off to a great start, but he
might be a hell of a player.
He's a great player, but he needs to be media trained. Like they need to take his phone away.
Is he trainable as media?
About to turn 24.
I hope so, because some of the things he says on Twitch, some of the things that he'll say on TikTok, my man is wild.
He is.
And I even told him when I saw him at the combine, I was like, bro. You a little wild, like
you told him that.
Yeah, I said something.
How did he receive that?
Nah, he started laughing because look. So actually, like basically,
just you wait.
3 years ago, right when he was at the American Conference, because it's the American Conference Media Day is in Dallas. So the commissioner asked me to go speak to like the athletes who were going to the who were the people there doing the media days, whatever. So I went to go speak, and I'm going to try to condense this story. The old president at Baylor, his name was Ian McCaw, right? Got wrapped up in all the Baylor scandal stuff, whatever. His son was the SID at UAB.
Okay.
And Yaxel was there, and it was somebody else. And he comes up to me because I knew him and basically told me that Yaxel was going to be a dude. He's great, yada, yada, all these different things. Me and Yaxel chopped it up for like 20 minutes, right? Just because I didn't know who he was. We just got to know each other and we just chopping up, have a good conversation. So we'd already built a rapport that way. So then when I finally see him at the combine, I was like, I don't know if you remember this. What happened? He's like, yeah, I remember King. Like, I remember you for sure. And I was like, bro, you be wilding sometimes, like on social media. Like, so like we had that rapport for me to say that. And he was just kind of like laughing it off, whatever. He was like, yeah, don't pay attention to that, whatever. And I'm like, nah, but you be wilding, like relax. Yeah. And like, he's cool, but like he has a lot of immature moments. Mm-hmm. Online to where it's like, all right, bro, like, come on now. And this statement right here just wasn't off to a good start. But he's a great player. He's incredible. When you watch him play at UAB, he put up video game numbers. Mm-hmm. When you watch him play at Michigan, he was elite. I mean, he produces. He just needs to, like, get off of his phone and just make smart decisions.
Yeah.
Please.
I've been using to help me with working out every day. I use the push scroll application, which requires me to do squats and push-ups and things like that in order to unlock minutes to use X, TikTok, Instagram, other important apps.
You've been using that?
Yeah.
I've been using that because I've shredded like 20 pounds this year.
I was going to ask you that. I was like, bro, you look good. You
I'm
look
a little
like
less fat
weight
than I was a year ago.
Like you lost some weight. But wait, how does that work?
I'm going to be even better looking next year, a year from now, when we do this again.
How does the app work? I'm curious.
More chiseled in a year. Not quite like you. You're a former athlete. You'll always have me beat.
Can you explain the app to me?
It's like, you like set the phone down and like you do like squats in front of the camera to unlock like minutes. So like,
what does this have to do with Yaxel Lendenborg?
because like you said, limit the apps. get him off his phone. You gotta give him something that locks it after 8 p.m. or requires him to, you know, hit 1,000 jumpers to open up TikTok. You know what I'm saying?
So not only going to be cut, but next year, maybe Push Scroll can add hit 10 free throws before you watch.
Exactly.
Is that, so what's
the, have a good
is
press conference call,
is
before.
This is great.
Push Scroll is looking
for.
It's called Push Scroll, the app?
Scroll, yeah.
I'm going to go look this up as soon as I get done.
All these little workouts. Yeah, you can do it. Yeah, it's a good time. I do it every day, 75 days straight or something like that. So the next 10 picks after the Golden State Warriors, I don't mean to trash Yaxel. I think it could be a really good pick for them, but they're losers for what happened behind the scenes. We'll be right back. Next 10 picks. OKC, Adaimata, Milwaukee, Nate Amentz, Charlotte, Hannes Steinbach, Chicago, Dalen Swain, Oklahoma City, Bennett Sturge traded up with Memphis to get him. 17, Detroit traded up to get Ibaka Okoro with Memphis after they traded down a slot back to 21. Charlotte, 18, Christian Anderson, point guard. 19, Toronto Raptors, Allen Graves. 20, Spurs, Jaden Quaintance. 21, Memphis Grizzlies, Kareem Lopez. When you think about biggest winners, Tom, who stands out to you as one of the big winners of this range in the middle of the draft?
Oh, it's OKC. I mean, the fact that they got Adaimata at 12. I had him 5 on my personal list of guys that I would draft in terms of talent, in terms of where the NBA is going, in terms of fit. I can't imagine a better player for the Oklahoma City Thunder than getting a guy who's 7'3", huge wingspan, can pass as well as any big, getting a rebound and throwing it 80 feet down the floor to anyone cutting. I think there's just going to be so much of this OKC offense and defense that is unlocked by this guy who's a lot more mobile than you see a lot of 7'3" guys moving at the NBA level. I think he is going to be a stud. And you have the comp there, KOC is Marcus Saul. And I love that because the passing that he has shown at Michigan, that I don't think he unlocked at UCLA quite as much, but the passing, the rim protection, averaging 4+ blocks and 4+ assists per 40 minutes. Impressive. That is crazy.
That's impressive.
Production, very rare skill set. And does he have the, does he need to work on his shot? Maybe he has the ability to stretch the five to the 3-point line. I don't think OKC needs that so much as they need size, skill, and he's got the combination of that no one else in this draft can compete with.
And ultimately, though, for that shooting equation with a die, he's got everything with the shooting under 60% from the free throw line and a very low volume 3-point shooter, not a lot of success. But if there's anywhere he's going to fix it, it's with Chip England, who the Thunder hired away from the Spurs a few years back, the greatest shooting coach maybe in the history of basketball. And there's an opportunity for him to fix it there with Oklahoma City. And then they trade up to get Sturts. They move up one spot, giving up 2 second round draft picks with number 17 to move up with Memphis to get Sturts. I was a bit surprised, but ultimately Sturts, I think he's just such a high IQ player, elite feel for the game, elite shooter off the catch, elite, a very good shooter off the dribble, connective passer. And we just saw a playoff series where they ran out of ball handlers. They ran out of creators. And so I think adding another one makes some sense to kind of top them off as one of the winners of the draft. But I know in our conversations earlier, King, that you don't love Sturts for Oklahoma City. Yeah. I'm curious what stands out to you about why this might be a mismatch fit for OKC?
Yeah, I mean, I love Sturts as a player, and I love OKC as an organization. I just don't think they mesh very well, more so because when I look at OKC and I look at their roster, like a lot of those role players, whether it be Lou Dort, whether it be Mitchell, whether it be Caruso, Cason Wallace, I mean, those guys are just hounds on the defensive side. Like, they hound you to death. And they make your life hell for 48 minutes or however long they're playing. I don't look at Bennett Sturts and say that he is that type of guy on defense.
Jared McCain do that, though?
I think he does it well enough. Yes, when you look at his size, and he can guard. Like, I really do think he can guard. I don't think Bennett Sturts truly I'm not going to say he can't guard, but we haven't seen him be able to guard to the level that OKC expects you to be able to. Now, offensively, for sure, it could definitely work because Bennett Sturts, his IQ is so high, he can work almost anywhere in any organization. But when you look about, when you look at role players for OKC, which is what Bennett Sturts is going to be asked to be, he's not going to be asked to be a star. He's asked to be a role player. The role players defend, they play hard. I think that when you limit him to be just that, a dude who plays hard, a dude who defends, it takes away from his overall game. And you don't get to see the full Bennett Sturts. That's the offensive mastermind, the offensive wizard. That's just a maestro in a pick and roll and so elite. So I don't see him fitting in as a role player for OKC.
Yeah, I think they have so many of those dogs defensively that they need more of that guy. They need more guys who can create.
But you got AJ Mitchell. I think it's an interesting pick. I think a lot of, like, when we look at this past NBA season, I think we have a certain conversation because AJ Mitchell and Jalen Williams was hurt. Our conversations post NBA Finals would be way different had those two guys not gotten hurt. I truly think we're having a conversation of, how do you beat OKC? Because they would have went back-to-back. Because OKC wins that series. If A.J. Mitchell and Jalen Williams never get hurt, they win that series. And we're not saying they need another guard. They need another ball handler. Because they had two who could win that series. They were winning that series. Then they would have beat the Knicks.
Yeah, so I think what you're saying is actually a reason why you might want to get Bennett is that you need more depth if you're going to have injuries. In those postseason runs, you need guys like Bennett Sturts to pick up that slack. So maybe it is a depth move where, like, yeah, we got AJ Mitchell, we got Jared McCain, we got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But if one of those go down in the playoffs, we need another guy, and that's Bennett Sturts.
So then, if they don't go down, then what do you do with Bennett Sturts?
Oh, I think it's a great luxury to have. If you don't go down and you win a championship without needing Bennett Sturts, then that's fine.
But what I'm saying is,
if
you have Bennett Sturts. Your injuries are non-existent. Now you've taken a talent like Bennett Sturts and you're not allowing him to really flourish.
Well, that's the thing with OKC, with any player they take. OKC is the type of organization, they have so much depth. We've seen guys go through that system. Usman Jang barely played at all, and then he gets traded to the Milwaukee Bucks, and he looks like a pretty good young player.
Yeah.
And I think I've heard stories of players refusing to work out for Oklahoma City because their agents are like, we don't want you to go there because it means your second contract, you're going to be getting paid pennies. I think that's a thing with the Thunder that they're trying to work around right now when it comes to getting players in. And so I think for the Thunder, what you're hitting on is a real situation for them that they're dealing with when it comes to getting workouts. But ultimately, I think Tom's right about the luxury aspect where, like, they need that depth because injuries are inevitable and you need guys you can rely on. And Bennett Sturts, with his age and his experience playing at so many different levels, playing 99% of his minutes, elite conditioning, I think he's the type of guy who's definitely a big win for them, in my opinion, especially after getting a die with the 12th pick. I think I'm curious, King, like with Charlotte, they got Hina Steinbach, and then they draft Christian Anderson at 14 and 18. Do you view Charlotte as one of the big winners of this draft?
Yeah, I definitely do. I'd put them right up there with OKC because I do think OKC would get Mara. You win right there. And yeah, to have the luxury of getting a Bennett Sturts, you're still winning. Do I think he fits? No, but just the fact that player is on your roster, you're easily winning, right? So I would say OKC 1, but Charlotte might be like 1B. So I would say 1A, 1B. Because with Charlotte, you just filled holes. You added on to what you needed. You got a big in Steinbach, who was the best rebounder in America last year. He's shown flashes that he can be a stretch big that can step out and shoot the three. It's not super consistent yet, but he's shown flashes that he can grow into it. So he plays hard. He rebounds, has a great feel for the game, extremely skilled. Right now you can throw him at the five spot, run a bunch of pick and rolls with him, Knipple, him, LaMelo Ball. It would look insane. Then you get a shooter like Christian Anderson to just add to the luxury of shooting that you like to play, the way you like to play. I think that these two picks absolutely hit perfectly.
Charles Lee is going to love this draft. Yes. Christian Anderson is a flamethrower.
Yes.
And the Charlotte Hornets love firing up threes. They love that type of offense. They're this kind of next generation the shot profile. And mm-hmm. and they absolutely love a guy like Christian Anderson who fires it up and shoots a high percentage as any Lee guard in the nation. And then you get Steinbach. Look, the rebounding for the Charlotte Hornets was a strength on that run that they did in the second half of the season. They were an elite rebounding team, and then they get another one in this one, but offers a different dynamic than Musa Diabate. So I expect that the Charlotte Hornets are very happy with their draft tonight.
Big winner to me, Memphis Grizzlies, the bright future Grizzlies, not just because of Kamboozer at number three. Kamboozer, a big win for them, my top-ranked player in the draft, but I think the trade down, the double trade down from 16 to 17 to pick up two additional second round picks, from 17 to 21 to pick up three more second round draft picks. They're getting draft capital and they get Kareem Lopez with the 21st pick, a guy that drew a lot of lottery conversation, was potentially in the conversation for Dallas at number nine. And to get him at number 21, somebody who's one of the younger players in the draft class, played 2 years professionally overseas for the New Zealand Breakers in the Australian League, got better each year at 6'8", 222 pounds, has a man's body. He's massive, versatile defensive player, good cutter, or screener, does the dirty work and crash the boards, needs to improve the jumper. But I think for Memphis at number 21, to get Kareem Lopez and five additional second-round draft picks to trade down twice, I think it was great GMing by Zach Kleiman. I'm impressed by that asset management. And I think getting Boozer and then getting Kareem Lopez while having this roster with Zach Edey and Cedric Coward, who I loved last year, one of my favorite players in last year's draft class, with Ty Jerome and Cam Spencer and Walter Clayton, this is one of the funner young teams in the entire league. And I just can't wait to see the way they build out this system. Are we about to see Point Boozer? Like, what's the system going to look like next year?
Well, what happens to Ja Morant? And that's where I'm looking at is they've got a lot of ball handlers there with Kamboozer, and then they go and get Kareem, where it looks like, man, what does Ja Morant's future look like in Memphis or somewhere else?
Yeah.
Because it seems like they are going for this youth movement. Now that you get a guy who was, you know, an 18-year-old dominating the college level in Kamboozer, and you trade Jaren Jackson Jr., and you have this kind of new era in Memphis, and now the question is Ja Morant going to be a part of that? I don't think he is going to be a part of that future. But, you know, the Sacramento Kings that were linked to Ja Morant for a long time, they go in and get Darius Acuff, and it feels like, oh, I don't know if they even need Ja Morant anymore. Nah, and so anymore. Question is, Memphis, what do they do now? They have a really exciting draft night here. But the question looming over the franchise is, their once foundational franchise player, potential face of the NBA, still on the roster, and they still got questions. But to me, it's Kamboozer's team now.
And I think one of the themes of this draft is just guards, 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 guards. And that's going to be the theme of the second round, too. There's a lot of good guards
still
in the second round of the draft. And so I think whether it's a Braden Smith or a Conwell, there's a lot of players in the second round that are going to be like good quality, I think, rotation guards moving forward in the NBA. When I look at my top available guys, Malik Thomas, Henry Vissar, Richie Saunders, Isaiah Evans, Jack Cale, Bruce Thornton, Tyler Bilodeau, Ryan Conwell, there's a lot of guards or two guards in that range. So I think it's going to be the topic again on Wednesday night with the second round. A team that traded up from the second round back into the first round was the San Antonio Spurs. I'm fascinated by what they did because they took Jaden Quaintance with the 20th pick. Quaintance, major injury concerns, wasn't able to do group workouts. He still is dealing with his knee injury. There's still soreness after he played four games this past year at Kentucky after having a torn ACL, torn meniscus, major surgery. There's been talk in league circles that Quaintance might have to miss his entire rookie season, possibly due to more surgery. We'll see if that happens. But the Spurs take a big swing at number 20, and then they trade back into the first round for the 25th pick, and they take Terrace Reed from UConn, who's one of the safer centers in the draft class. And What do you think this means from San Antonio from a strategic standpoint to be taking two bigs, Tom?
They want to lower Victor Wembanyama's output. I think they want to put him on ice for a lot of the next season to get him ready for the postseason, because I think drafting two centers, I think two bigs like that is a statement about, hey, we want to make sure that Victor Wembanyama has enough legs to win the championship next year. And he wore down against the New York Knicks in the finals, where Jalen Brunson certainly got the upper hand on that. And I do think that the San Antonio Spurs were very particular about the type of player that they were drafting at the end of the first round. Very telling when it comes to Victor Wembanyama that they got two centers and Luke Kornet still on the roster. This might be a situation where they decide, hey, Wemby, we need you to have legs come June next year. And so that's why we're getting these guys.
Yeah, I love the Terrence Reed edition. I mean, with Jaden Quaintance, you just don't know. Jaden Quaintance can never play a game in the NBA, and I wouldn't be shocked based off his history with his injuries. But Terrence Reed is a guy who from day one next year, you can throw him on an NBA floor. Physically, he's ready. The way that he plays, being able to be a high-level rim protector, he could be some kind of a lob threat, but he could throw it to him on the block sometimes. He can go score. He sets great screens. He's super physical, great rebounder. I think that he can make sense in the rotation for San Antonio. I mean, it's just the type of player you want. Tough, hard-nosed, plays defense. He's the type of player you want, has a winning pedigree. He's what you want in this organization.
You have Mason Plumlee as a comp. So you have Mason Plumlee, his comp, and you got Bismack Biyombo and Jaden Quaintance. Which one of those are going to do a hit, like to go hit a guy in the playoffs next year?
Who's Wemby going to be whispering in the ear?
Exactly. So, you know,
a lot of bodies, a lot of bodyguards around him now.
That's right. That's right. So I do think that the questions are Kelly Olynyk, Bismack Biyombo, Mason Plumlee. Olynyk
wouldn't hurt a fly.
Yeah. Well, I do think that when you look at the guys that they got, I don't know. I don't know enough about Terrence Reed if he's got sharp elbows or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, we'll learn quickly, huh?
Sharp elbows on the post. You can't really carve out space inside.
It really interesting night from San Antonio.
It definitely is. I'm very intrigued by their approach tonight. In the 20s, so we talked about Jaden Quaintance to the Spurs, Kareem Lopez to the Memphis Grizzlies. 22, Philadelphia, LeBaron Fialon. 23, Atlanta, Zubi Ejiofor. 24, Lakers, Cameron Carr. 25, Dallas traded up, Sergio Del Arroyo. We talked about that earlier. 26, San Antonio, Terrence Reed. We talked about that. Boston, 27, Chris Sinak. 28, Brooklyn, Joshua Jefferson. They traded into the first round to get him, of course, with the Minnesota deal. 29, Sacramento, Alex Caravan. They traded in with Cleveland to get that pick on draft night. 30, Phoenix Suns, Koa Pete. Tom, from this kind of 21 to 30 range, who steals out to you as the biggest steal in the latter third of the first round?
Yeah, LeBaron Fialon, I think, falling to the 76ers there at 22, to me, really stands out. Some people might think he's too wiry, not strong enough as a guard. Does a lot of the redundant qualities at the lead guard when you have Tyrese Maxey, you have Vijay Edgecombe. Does he fit the type of role that you're going to need from the Philadelphia 76ers going forward? I don't know. But to me, if he's the best player, best scorer, a guy who gets downhill and able to score at a high level, to me, I think it's interesting that Mike Gansey as his first, you know, draft pick this year, getting LeBaron Fialon, who we were saying in the draft show live, when is he going to get picked? When is he going to get picked? And ultimately, he goes to the Philadelphia 76ers that we just watched Dylan Harper already get drafted into a team that had De'Aaron Fox and Stephon Castle. You can't have too many of those lead guards that can dribble, score, shoot, pass, and they got one here in Fialon.
You know, I really like Cam Carr because I think that him going to the Lakers, you put him in a situation where he doesn't have to do much but be himself. Be a spot-up shooter. Be a guy who can pump fake, get to the rim on limited dribbles. But he's having things done for him. Everybody else, whether that's Luka, whether that's Bron, if he stays, right? Guys can actually create for him, and he can just step 3 feet behind a three-point line and just spot up and knock it down, let it fly. I think that he is going to excel in this role. We saw what he did at the combine. We saw what he was able to do at Baylor with limited point guard play. I think when you add an elite-level passer like Luka and potentially Bron, to a guy like Cam Carr, they're going to make him excel. He's going to excel in his role. He's going to be great for them.
You know, between those two picks, Filon at 22 to Philly, 24 Cam Carr to the Lakers. I think, you know, from a value standpoint, Filon makes sense. I don't love the small guard fit. I don't think it makes sense. It's too small with Maxey and Filon, but he's a steal in terms of value. I had him ranked in the lottery. Cam Carr makes sense as well for the Lakers. Between those two, 23 Atlanta. I love what Atlanta did with the Kingston Flemings at 8. Zubi Ejiofor at 23 kind of surprised me, King, because I think Atlanta, when you look at their roster, they need a true five. Zubi Ejiofor, literally in my draft guide, one of the comparisons I have for him is Onyeka Okongwu. And he's going to the team with Onyeka Okongwu. And I think they needed a true five here. I'm a little surprised we didn't see them take Terrace Reed or Henry Sarr from North Carolina. Keep talking me off the ledge here with Atlanta, like with them taking Zubi.
No, I mean, I think there's a lot to like about Zubi. I mean, defensive player of the year, just plays so hard, a little undersized.
Don't get me wrong. I don't want to poop on Zubi.
Yeah, no, for sure. Player. So there's a lot to like, but I can agree in a sense of you don't want to repeat with Onyeka. Yeah. Especially when you had to do like Vassar still on the board. I mean, who could stretch the floor, who can be a lob threat. Who can rebound the basketball, who can block shots because he's a very underrated athlete. I mean, it kind of just gives you some versatility, gives you some more shooting if you take a dude like Vassar. So I can agree with this. I think that, you know, whenever you have a guy with a motor like Ejiofor, you can never go wrong. But I will say that there probably was some better options on the table.
I think that's fair. And I think for my steal of this latter half of the draft, I'm going to go with Alex Caravan to the Sacramento Kings.
How about that?
Yeah,
number 20. I know he's old. He's like 35 right now. No, he's like 20, he's 24. He'll be 24 as a rookie. I just think Caravan is just a winner.
He's a good player, man.
Through and through. And for Sacramento to get back, to lighten the beam, you need guys like Alex Caravan. Yeah. And I think it was a really aggressive move. I had Caravan to the Kings at 34 in my mock. I heard him connected to Sacramento. Mm. I think it just makes sense. You get Acuff at 7, a guy who can be the leader of your franchise, the true point guard. And you pair him with Maxime Reyneau and Neat Clifford from last year. And hopefully Devin Carter can figure things out at some point. Mm-hmm. And then you bring in Alex Caravan, a 2-time champion at UConn, a winning player who can bang threes, can do a little bit from the post, can make the smart pass, can cut to the rim and screen and just do all the winning things while also defending hard and constantly hustling. I just think the dude's a winner. And for a team like Sacramento, I think they drafted two winners tonight in Darius Acuff at number 7 and Alex Caravan at number 29. And I really respect the aggression to go for it, trading up into the first round to get Caravan. And I also respect the willingness just to stay at 7, knowing that 5 and 6, LA and Brooklyn, they weren't taking Acuff. They were just bluffing, trying to make you give something up, and you didn't do it. So I think this Kings front office, they got to sort out the veterans, which make no sense at all. They got to figure out Sabonis and DeRozan and all these guys. Zach LaVine, get them out of here.
Get them out.
Play the kids.
Play the kids.
The kids are good.
Light the beam.
I want to light
play
the beam,
the
Tom.
Play the kids. Play. Yes. Doesn't have the same ring to it. I don't know. But I totally agree, Kev. Like I think they need to just go full on rebuild. And it was cool to see Russell Westbrook there. It was cool to see Sabonis being an all-star at that position. But I think it's run its course.
Yeah.
I think it's run its course. And I think Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Domantas Sabonis, I think by the end of the trade deadline next year, I would hope that the Sacramento Kings moved on.
I hope so as well. And I'm excited for round two. It's a lot of good players in the second round. I think we're going to see some contenders adding players who could play on their rookie scale contract and some potential seniors going to young teams and making them feel a bit more, you know, like, hey, we get something going on here. We get some veterans in the room to help us play. King, Tom, this was a hell of a 5 hours with you guys, or however long it was. We did the whole live show, 3.5 hours with Ice Young, our excellent host as well. And hey, we just finished up my pod. Thank you, King. Thank you, Tom.
Sir.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Nah, anytime, my man.
It was a great time. And now I got to check out Push Scroll.
Yeah,
no. I'm definitely about to go check out Push Girl.
I'm gonna have to do some push-ups and whatnot in the morning to open up my app for my self-driving ride home to Boston, so I can, you know, get ready for the second round tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Tom and King, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you everybody in the live YouTube chat. Very active tonight. Appreciate you guys tuning in live. We'll be back with a podcast. I think me and Tom will be recording Thursday morning, reacting to the second round of the draft, recapping everything else that happens. I mean, it's very possible we see more trades. Jaylen Brown stuff could still happen. We'll find out what happens there. What's going to happen with Minnesota with this traded player exception? I think they're just being cheap. We'll see what happens with all these trades, everything in the second round. My show next will be on Thursday. Be sure to check out King McClure and Tom Havisher, everything they do. Thank you so much for watching us live. Talk to you guys soon. Have a good night, everybody.